We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into the latest OBR Film Breakdown. It's Jake, it's Andrew. We're here on the weekend to do a mailbag edition. It is, look, I mean, the whole theme of this mailbag is going to be essentially who would you trade up for? Everybody wants good players in the draft, and when you pick in the second and third rounds, you're usually saying, how can we get up a little bit higher to take a better player, right? Or even, hell, if the Browns were picking 20th or 23rd, they would probably be figuring out how to jump up into the top 10 to pick a better player. So we'll try to answer as many of your draft related questions as we possibly can, which again, some of them overlap. So we'll try to sort of call out those of you who asked a similar question and make sure that we answered it for you. And again, if you want to get on future editions of this, it's very simple. Usually I'll put out a tweet at the OBR Film Breakdown podcast Twitter page, OBR Film BDN. And then we will spend some time taking all of those, condensing them, putting them together. You can also shoot it over to my email, jake@theobr.com, or you could do a direct message through the OBR's website. So those are the places we gather the questions from. And if we have maybe a mailbag post-draft and you want to get some questions answered, that's the way to do it, if you'd like to participate in this. So those of you who sent stuff over, obviously greatly appreciated. And this should be a pretty good episode of talking about some prospects at the top two spots that Andrew and I have been spending a decent amount of time going over the past month, because anything outside the top 100, man, is really difficult to pin down. And you almost have to have that conversation, which I'm sure Andrew and I will have that conversation after day two of the draft, where we really dig in on best available for day three and stuff like that. So we'll do our best there, but a pretty jam-packed slate of questions. We should be in a good spot here to get some answers out. Andrew, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good, Jake. I'm excited. You mentioned, you know, talking about the third day of the draft after the second day. And I got excited about the, you know, recording that podcast next Friday night after we watch round two. That's always the one of the things that I enjoy the most of it. And one of the smartest things the NFL did by breaking it up into multiple days. I remember fondly the days of my youth when it all happened on one day, and that was fun in its own way. This is fun because you get to do, I'm sure we'll have a podcast Thursday night talking about the best players that are still available, fantasizing or hypothesizing about how the Browns could end up with one of them 20 mm-hmm. picks into the second round, but it'll be even the same thing going into the fourth round. And, you know, maybe they change their position so they have a different pick. I think, you know, I feel like if they move down, that would be to kind of try and bring a little bit more to that sort of top of the third day, because they're really quiet there. They have nothing in the fourth round. I could see them, especially after hitting on DeJuan Jones last year, thinking like that would be a good value to pick up a player or two that's really dropping. The player that I'm thinking about now in that realm is like, if Andrew Berry has similar feelings to Tavondre Sweat that he did to DeJuan Jones, right? Like, I know that it's a player that's an overlap of Siaki Ika, but could that be something where all of a sudden at pick 120 something, it feels okay, whereas if you had to pick him at 54, you wouldn't feel great about it. So anyway, long way of saying I'm doing well and very excited for how the draft unfolds over multiple days, because we really get a chance to kind of break it down multiple times.
Two trivia questions for you, Andrew, because I also remember the single day draft stuff, and that was really fun. I remember being a kid. For some reason, you get these like memories of where you were, and at the time, like, sitting in the living room of the house that my family lived in high school, and writing down picks for as long as it entertained me, just going through them, and having a really good time doing that. And those are fun memories. I wish I was a little older and had remembered what that was really like, having maybe done this, what we're doing, covering the league now, and covering a team, to just do it on one day and remember. Because the question I had, first trivia question I have for you, is what year did the draft become a 3-day ordeal? Do you remember?
It was either 2010 or 2011.
It's 2010. So yeah. 2010 is the first year. And then the second trivia question for you is, what year did it leave Radio City Music Hall as a full-time spot of...
And where did it go first would be the subsidiary question.
It went 2 straight years in one place.
That's right. And it went to... I am
Chicago.
Totally blanking. Why did they do it in Chicago 2 straight years?
No idea. 2 straight years. That's the only time they've ever done 2 straight. When so Chicago, strange. Chicago, and then Philly.
So like 14 or 15, something like that?
You're doing pretty well. It was 15. So nice. 2010, it separates to 3 days, and then 2015.
I remember that it was 2010 because I remember that was the Julio Jones draft, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And I remember that being at night and being... you know, having like really struggling to assimilate, like it being late at night, me having to go to work the next morning.
Yeah.
Like with a big, like disappointing trade down, where it was like, oh man, it's not even the weekend. I have to still have like a normal day tomorrow. And the Browns just did this to themselves.
I remember vividly 2009, the last year was a single day, the Browns drafting Alex Mack. I was an RA in college, sitting at the front desk working. And it was a morning shift into lunchtime. And like, I can remember ordering lunch and where I was for all of that. And then I very vividly remember the next year, like you said, being in the spot to, it was actually 2 years later, 2011.
Yeah, I was just looking that up. Jones was 11. Yep.
Yeah. So I remember 2010 when it went to the evening when the Browns drafted Joe Hayden in that evening. So it's funny. You kind of can remember where you are for some of these, but I would have guessed, had I not looked this up, quite obviously, I would have guessed like 2013 or so. But I think the 2010 to 2020 decade is the fastest decade I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I don't know where those years went. So not surprising to me that those would be missing. All right, let's get to the questions. Good job by Andrew, 2 for 2 on trivia. Even though he answered multiple years for those, we'll let it slide. We'll give him a break. Let's do the Twitter questions first. First question is from Noah Schaefer, who runs a pretty popular Twitter site here, @BrownCentral_. When doing mock draft simulators, I never trade because I don't know how one GM values picks versus another. How would you describe, to the best of your knowledge, how GMs value picks, and what would a trade down look like if the Browns were to bridge the large gap between picks such as 54 to 85 or 85 to 156? Look, in my opinion, it's a trickier situation than ever. I was just reading a quote from Brent Veach with the Chiefs talking about, everybody seems to be saying a similar thing. The late round picks are older and guys are staying in school longer, and the value of hitting on those guys later is even harder than it's ever been. And everyone knows it. So your late round picks, to me, feel like they have to be used to package different things than they used to. And that is something that is, like, to me, when you're talking about bridging the gap between 85 and 156, something that you have to consider, where you used to be able to like overwhelm somebody with the volume of picks to get a pick you wanted. That seems less likely than ever. Teams are pretty smart about using the two different charts. That's how, anytime I'm doing, like, don't go by the simulator's algorithms on that stuff. They're kind of faulty. I think you got to do some of those, Andrew, the Spielberger Fitzgerald chart, I think, is one of them, and the Jimmy Johnson or whatever the other trade chart is. Teams are matching those, and I believe most are still using the Jimmy Johnson one, or I don't know if it's called Jimmy. Am I saying that right?
His name.
I think it is. Yeah. Well, I didn't know if it was just his name that was on that chart, but like that seems to be the most popular usage. So when doing those, that's how I would do it. The Browns, if they're looking to gain an extra pick between, in my opinion, Andrew, it's probably like you take pick 60 and then you can have pick 70. Or something like that, where you're moving back 5 and then in the 80s moving up 10 or 15 picks. That sort of, I think, has become most popular lately, where you're swapping picks, swapping positions. And I think that if the Browns were to do that, sort of similar to when they moved up for JOK all those years ago, it would be something along the lines of gaining some future pick to move up while giving something back. I mean, I know the Martin Emerson trade was a little different because they were able to gain some draft capital there too. But I think one, I would listen, if I were a gambling man, I'd say one of these two, 54 and 85, don't happen. Are you convinced, or where are you sitting on that?
I think it's likely, from the standpoint that I think that they are flexible in terms of their, you know, their draft board and where they want to pick players, and understand that they usually win those trades. So it feels to me like they're probably more open for business than other teams because they trust their valuation more. And that valuation is more out of line with the Jimmy Johnson trade chart than other teams. So it creates more opportunities for what I would consider, or I think both teams would consider, win-win trades, right? Where the other team thinks that they fleeced the Browns, and the Browns are convinced they fleeced the other team, and so everybody's happy. Which I think that, and the sort of thing you said, where they maybe even move from both picks, and in the process manage to add another asset or create another asset earlier in this draft, I think that makes sense too. I agree with you in terms that the sixth, the three picks they have in the 200s, I don't think they need to make them. Like, unless there's a priority UDFA type that they really love, that they feel like they need to get a jump on in the seventh round, or a depth piece that is, you know, an older player that they think can contribute right away to specials or something like that. I don't see the like really strong case for being involved with any of those players in the 200s. So the question is, can you leverage those three picks into either a meaningful pick this year, which I would consider something in like the 120s, 140s, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Or push some of that out somehow and recoup some value, even if it's a sixth rounder for next year, because we know from the Jerry Jeudy trade, those sixth rounders can turn into veteran players. Or, you know, for that matter, maybe there's a veteran player that becomes available in this draft that they want to take a swing on and add to the team. That is something that Andrew Berry even referenced directly in his press conference.
Yeah, not all too common, but I think there's a chance, because of the uncommon nature of where things are going, that we could see some of those players moved in draft that we haven't in years past, because teams are really looking to figure out ways to improve their roster who have an abundance of day three choices, right? So something to keep in mind. Next question comes from Hunter Anthony. He asks, does the Nick Chubb contract rework change your mind about a possible running back at 54? Not like if the Browns had a chance in the first round to pick a premium position, Andrew, I think 54 could have been on the table. Given 54 is their best asset here, I don't even see that, and I didn't before the rework deal with Nick, as a possible position they'd be spending on. I just don't think it aligns, so I'm just going to say no.
I agree with you, but I'll add that it's much more on the table for me at 85 or whatever that second pick ends up being.
Correct.
Than it was.
Even a trade down, if they gain something, right?
Agreed. Even if they want to trade down to the fringe of the second, up beginning of the third. And, you know, while we're here, I'll just mention the player that I would love to see picked with that pick, and it's Trey Benson from Florida State. I think that's the guy that there's sort of two paths here. I think he has enough durability that he could become the feature back of more of a committee. I don't think that he's going to be a Nick Chubb where he can handle 20, 25 touches, but you certainly could give him 15 to 20. Or he becomes the second back in a shared backfield situation with Nick Chubb. And that allows you to potentially showcase both players. But I really like his running style. I like the fit in terms of pass catching for what the Browns are going to want to do more of this year from spread formation. So it's not just that I think that it's increased, but I think that's, in my mind, that's the player that would make the most sense for them.
Right on. Good answer. I don't have much to add to it. I think Benson's fun. And it just remains more possible than ever if they're moving down or at pick 85, like you said.
I mean, while we're here, though, is there a guy for you that you would, if other than Benson, that if they went that way at 85 or in that range, you'd be good with?
Good question. I don't think I'd pound the table for anyone aggressive. I mean, Jonathan Brooks, but he feels like a guy that a team is going to take already. I think I could get behind a lot of different paths, Andrew. I could get behind the Jalen Wright because of the speed stuff that you really like there. Marshawn Lloyd. I think that the only guy I'd be like, man, I'd be really excited they get to him is is just because of the mixture of youth and all of that is Benson. So that's probably one of the few I'd be fighting for. I mean, Wright would be good, but there are some holes in his game that that make you a little bit nervous. But again, I think the most logical path to getting a value running back for the Browns, where you're like, all right, they didn't overextend themselves. If you wait to 156, it gets a little slippery. You're just going to, like, 156 on, you're just taking it back and hoping for the best, right? But in the, like, 120s, I feel like you could get, like, an Audric Estime, Bucky Irving type of back, maybe even a Marshawn Lloyd, Braylon Allen type that, like, could fall into that range. And there you would be pretty excited about the pathway to value for that player. But it's again, it's a weird running back class, and it wouldn't be one that I'd be surprised if names toward the bottom end up making bigger impacts than names at the top, just because of, I think, the nature of it is pretty strange. But I do think Brooks is the top guy too, but I feel like he's gone maybe even right before 54 for some team who really wants a running back for their situation. So I don't think that if they were like, Jake, you got to pick a guy at 54, that would probably be it. But again, slippery slope. All right, next question. With current picks the Browns have, who are two players you would have been ecstatic to see them take, or you would be ecstatic to see them take in the second and third round? So I don't know, Andrew, just we can name one in the next as far as guys we'd be ecstatic about taking. You can name your second guy, a round guy, and a third round guy if you want, and then I'll try as well.
Well, yeah, my second guy, I think the guy that I'm kind of planting my flag on as the guy that I think makes sense for the Browns, and we've talked before on the pod about, I don't fully understand exactly where his draft slot is, but I think that's true for a lot of players in the second round, as we just talked about. But it's Malachi Corley, because I think basically the argument here is there's not another receiver in this draft that has his particular run after catch skill set. I mean, some of the up top guys, just because of their elite athleticism, but his just like his toughness and doggedness in terms of fighting for extra yards is cool, and I think would be really useful for the Browns in terms of where they're headed offensively. They don't have that guy right now on the team, and I think if you're able to get Cooper, Judy, Njoku down the field more often, there needs to be somebody that's going to eat up yards underneath when those guys clear out, and that's the type of player I envision him being at the next level. I think obviously the upside is the question, like, can he really get to that Deebo Samuel level? That's a lot to put on a kid that you're drafting in the second round, but Deebo Samuel was a second round pick, right? So that's probably the player that I think he's going to be there at 54 is the thing. So I don't like want to go over top in terms of saying ecstatic, right? But like, that's the player that I think if they drop that pick at 54, I'd be pretty thrilled.
Yeah, I would say if you're saying 54 there, for me, I'll do the one in the third round. I mean, to me, the best answer is probably Karan Amagadaji, right? The Yale offensive tackle. I think that'd be a good spot because he's kind of slated around the 80s. And if I'm forced to say another one in that range, like Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame, like, I would love 85 to be a value tackle to develop. That's sort of a mesh point for a lot of what I like. Like, I'm drawn to somebody a little more of the athletic positions at 54, and then that mesh of tackle at 85 is a lot of fun, because 54, I think you got some real chances to have some guys slide in the draft and land in your lap, and then 85 is like, can we get the right guy to land in that range? And between Fisher and then Amagadaji, I think you got a good chance to get somebody who can be a part of the future of your offensive line. So those are two for you there, Andy. Next is Eddie Schwertner, who says, for the tight end two and tight end three spots specifically, would it be a better strategy to draft older, more experienced players like Stover or Eric All from Iowa so that they can contribute quickly, knowing that the position takes a long time to develop in the NFL and you already have a tight end one with Njoku? I would say my response to that is, just because you're older doesn't make the transition any less difficult at tight end. Sometimes being a little more physically mature can help, but I don't think that there's some proven data that says coming in at 24 as a tight end means you're better equipped to handle the NFL than a 22-year-old. So I don't think I'm trending towards selecting older tight ends. I mean, there is an old tight end in McLaughlin, the kid from Arizona that I would be fine taking late, but he's 25. I mean, that's like, it's tricky, but I still think he has like stuff that is still flawed in his game. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I think correlating that to being ready to go early would be nice, but it's not proven to be the case for some of these guys who come in a little bit older. It just isn't, unfortunately. Anything to add to that, Andrew?
Well, I would just say that I think the thing that helps tight ends adapt to the NFL recently is athleticism, more than age, right? Like it's ability to really be treated as a wide receiver early and then figure out some of the nuances of the position as you grow. So to me, I think the answer for finding a tight end that can contribute, especially with where the Browns are headed on offense, is definitely a player that can move really well. So
yeah,
I think one of the conversations that I've kind of pinpointed around the Browns in this draft is they keep getting slotted for a tight end, especially with some of those later picks. Is it a move guy who's athletic first, or is it a guy that can block first? And I think it tells us a lot about where the offense is headed. And I think there's a wide variety of people that think that they need a sort of like inline blocking guy to back up some of the guys that they have ahead of them. But I don't see that need considering the way that I think this offense is headed. I just don't think they're going to use two tight ends enough to justify it.
David Slivka got his question here live on the pod. It just came across my feed, Andrew. Is there any position at 54 that could be a day one starter? In the past, every draft pick seemed like there'd be a chance to play. But now with Barry's position on the roster setup, it says it has the Browns and a chance to like, you know, be patient with these guys or depth or play for the future. Is there any of those that you love at 54 that could play right away? I'm drawn to thinking, I mean, if Edgerrin Cooper is there at 54, he could play right away for you. There's probably a select group of receivers that could come in and fill a role. Keon Coleman. You're probably talking about, I think, you know, he's a little older, but again, Ricky Pearsall could play right away for you. Be a starter. Defensive tackle's a little harder for me. Falling to Chris Jenkins, I think, would need time. One that stands out to me, though, Andrew, is like Mike Sainer still, right? He could come in and be your nickel from day one, if you ask me. Again, that's, you know, you'd have to figure out something with Greg Newsome, but that's a guy who could start right away. Other guys at 54, I mean, you know, you're talking like, is Mike Hall ready to go? I don't know. I don't think he'd be an every down defensive tackle. And then the offensive tackles between like Roger Rosengarten and then Blake Fisher and the others that we've talked about here, Amagadaji, you probably would want to be a little bit more patient with them. So 54 is a tricky spot there. You're probably our boy Rook could play relatively early. Ohoroho, right? Our guy. We're shortening one of the O's out of that name. He could probably play early. I mean, defensive tackles are hard because they rotate guys. So it's a little tricky there, but
right. They're going to get on the field, but are they playing a majority of snaps? Probably not. I mean, I think the big thing here is the Browns don't want to draft a player to start right away. I mean, Barry basically said that in his press conference, that they don't think about these draft picks in terms of what they need them to do this season. They think about where they're going to be in years two and three. And
Belichick made a good point of that on the show with McAfee about how you don't really judge these guys until they're in the middle of their second year because they're figuring out so much. So there's some guys there, like, again, probably Junior Colson's in that range too, Andrew, but
sure. But it's just,
what do they need?
And what he said was, if a guy finds his way on the field like DeJuan Jones, then you play him. But right. You know, you also got to remember that was brought on by injury, right? I mean, they played DeJuan Jones not because he was better than Jack Conklin in training camp, but because Jack Conklin got hurt right away. So right. They are committed to the idea of these guys mostly having a year to get into the system and see what they are. Alex Wright is that didn't just happen to Alex Wright because he was out of UAB. That happened because they believe in the idea of giving these guys time to acclimate to the NFL. And I think part of that they don't say as much, but I read it in between the lines, is that they might also think that it's detrimental to these players to expose them to too much too early. Because right. They want to build confidence in their players. That's very clear.
Okay, let's take a quick break, come back from break, and then we have some good questions to close this at about four or so to go. So we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. Okay, Andrew, good question here from Dave Clark. Who are your favorite second round picks over the last 15 years? For the Browns, obviously, we're not going to go across the entire NFL landscape. He said, mine is Nick Chubb, and I'm keen on a running back this year. Well, we've already kind of deflated you a little bit by saying we're not quite interested in taking him back, but let's go to 2010. We'll go there, right? Second round picks that year, TJ Ward, Montario Hardesty, right? Those are your guys to choose from. Two second round picks again in 2011, Jabal Sheard, nice career, but not mostly with Cleveland. Greg Little. Second round pick in 2012, Mitchell Schwartz. No second round pick in 2013. Second round pick in 2014, Joel Bitonio. What's up? Second round pick in 2015, Nate Orchard. Second round pick in 2016, Emmanuel Ogba. In 2017, Deshaun Kizer. 2018, Austin Corbett, then Nick Chubb. 2019, Greedy Williams. That was the Odell Beckham, Dexter Lawrence pick. First round there that went to New York. It's 2020s is Grant Delpit. 2021 is JOK. And then they have not had a second round pick the last 2 years. So it's probably between JOK, Grant Delpit, Nick Chubb. You could probably say Ogba and Bitonio.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's really only one answer to this question in my mind.
Who you got?
It's got to be Joel Bitonio.
It has to be. If he's saying Nick Chubb and we're not picking Chubb because that's one that's low-hanging fruit. I mean, I think Bitonio's quite obviously the one that is proven. He's had the longest duration of time to prove it. I like it too. But, you know, I mean, I'm a sucker for JOK. I don't know if I've been that excited about a second-round pick. Almost felt like the Browns got two first-round picks when they jumped up to pick 52, which kind of gets me a little excited, Andrew, about like how I felt about a 52nd pick overall and the Browns are picking 54. So if we could recreate that feeling, that'd be nice again.
There's a chance it could be really fun. I mean, I just think as far as Joel Bitonio, he's on the edge, I think everybody seems to agree, on the edge of putting together a Hall of Fame career as a guard.
Probably two more Pro Bowls he could
Which
get.
In the modern, yeah, exactly. Which in the modern NFL is almost unthinkable, right? And as much as I think Nick Chubb is a fan favorite and a hell of a player, I think he's really going to struggle to even get Hall of Fame votes unless he somehow comes back better than ever from this knee injury. I'm not counting him out. God knows. If anybody can do it, it's Nick Chubb. We know who he is as a person and as an athlete. But Joel Bitonio is almost there, and I just don't think I don't think there's anybody that comes that comes close to that. And then you talk about the surplus value created from a second-round pick right. who's going to go on to be a Hall of Famer. So it's guard. It's not the sexiest position, but Bitonio has been through every gross thing that's happened in Cleveland over the past decade and got to see the other side of it, unlike Joe Thomas, which is great too because he's enjoying this relatively successful years of the past few. So that's for sure my pick, and I think the main thing I would take away from that, Jake, is the Browns did a really bad job of retaining their own talent and developing it for a decade.
Yeah, like Agba leaving, Mitchell Schwartz leaving, a lot of those guys that were talented in that. I mean, Jabal Sheard's best years were as a Patriot, right? I mean, I think TJ Ward's best years were when he was with the Broncos. So, yeah, that's right. A fair point.
Almost all of the players, the vast majority of the players they drafted
yeah.
in that lost decade went on to have more success elsewhere. And the fact that the Browns, I sometimes criticize the Browns for holding on to their own players too long. This would be the most effective rejoinder to that criticism, which is essentially you'd rather be sometimes too late on your own guys than too early, because you can let a productive player who's going to contribute to the NFL for a decade out the door. And there is always a hometown discount in the NFL. So you lose some of the value of those players.
Well, I mean, Nick Chubb's got 2 all pros, so we can't miss that. I mean, that does help his case a little. I'm just kidding. He has none. It's hard to believe that he has not made 1 all pro listing. He's got 4
pro. I honestly didn't even know that you were making that up. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's crazy. It is crazy that he's gone through these great years and that's the result. So, all right, let's. Next question comes from Bob. He has a question about offensive line. Would you prefer an early pick of ours take say a left tackle or left tackle prospect that can slide down to guard, knowing they get a first round pick back next year to get a top tackle if needed? O line worries me a bit with Bitonio getting older and Teller. I think some people have thrown this idea out, Andrew, where like, in this class, maybe you don't take a receiver in the second round or third round because there's good offensive line depth, and then you can maybe attack a premium position like wide receiver next year. I mean, we're high on Kingsley. We're high on some guys like we mentioned earlier in the third round. I'm fine with that, but the board has to fall, right? You know, like if you're going to take those tackles, you can't reach for some tackle because you're thinking about next year's draft, right? So, I mean, I'm fine with taking players that I think can play offensive line and you can develop them in this class, but I think it's like something I'm really afraid of reaching on. They won't. They're clear about this stuff, but like, I don't think we need to worry ourselves too much with it right now. But it is a good offensive tackle class to pursue some of these guys we're talking about and make that a part of your strategy.
Right. I think the thing that the wide receiver and tackle class have in common is there's just so many of them. So if certain teams just decide to go a different direction at either position, all of a sudden a player that people have been talking about as a end of the first round player ends up in striking distance for the Browns for a small trade up if they wanted to. And so that's what I'm watching in terms of how they make this decision. I think one of the most interesting questions about the first pick for the Browns is, does a player that the Browns have graded as a first round player fall into the mid 40s enough that they're willing to justify or make a small move up for that player? And I think it could happen at either wide receiver or tackle.
Well, the next question here from AZ Crypto Sup asked his question is basically he's kind of saying, who would you feel the way we felt about JOK at 52? Who's a player in this draft that if they're sitting there and like at 50, you're shaking, your fingers are crossed, you're whatever about, can this guy get to 54? Can the Browns move up to go get him? Because that was the JOK experience, was like, he's sitting here at 50. Can they go up and get the guy instead of, and they did. And that was why it was so jarring. Is there a guy for you, Andrew? Is it Keon Coleman? Like, who's sitting there at 50 that you're like, man, I would love to just go get this done and move up and end up landing that player because I'm nervous somebody else could take him. I don't know if there is someone. I mean, the thing about JOK was like, he was a like first round flirting player. So we were thinking the Browns could take him at like 26, let alone him being there at 50. So you're probably looking in the, I mean, if you're looking at the range that he was sort of in, like, there's no way Jerzon Newton falls that far, but like, Chop Robinson, maybe a guy that like an edge, a good edge player that slides down that far, or we've sort of mentioned some others. Maybe A.D. Mitchell falls because of something. I don't know. I just don't know. Who's that player for you? Do you have someone kind of fringe first round that's falling down into the 50s and you're like, go get him? Jordan
right,
Morgan?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the two tackles right at the edge there. The player that I'll just mention in this conversation is if Brian Thomas were to fall into the back at like the last eight picks of the third round or first round. that's one that I personally would be very excited about because I, having looked at this class overall, I think Brian Thomas is if not, he's not maybe quite at the same level as the three guys at the top, but he's right there. And I think a true, like has a chance to be a truly elite wide receiver. And had the thing happen to him that sometimes happens in the modern college football, where if you're on a team with another really good wide receiver, you get overshadowed. It's just natural, right? So I would be thrilled for the Browns to do what they, if they could get up into like 25, 26, something like that, that would be a spot for them to go get Brian Thomas. But I think that's not really the spirit of your question, which is like a player in the 40s that would become available. So I think that probably the answer there is Suah Mataia, if he's there. I would feel really good about them making a small move up to secure if they feel conviction about that player. You kind of mentioned this. I think there's kind of a group of wide receivers from McConkey, Mitchell, Coleman, probably even, I think the way that it looks now, Roman Wilson and Ricky Pearsall are in this conversation as well, that they might not be there at 54, but they might be there at like 40 to 45.
Right. Good stuff. Next question is from Hunter Anthony. Who are three players the national media seems to be too high on that you expect to fall out of the first or second round? And then who are three players the media isn't high enough on that could surprise? So Andrew and I kind of answered this one before because it's a trickier question. You got to think it through. So three who I think move up into the first round, maybe from a fringe 30 number, is like Chop Robinson, Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia comes to mind. And we keep hearing some buzz about Mike Hall. So maybe Mike Hall gets into the 40s where some people think he could be an early third round guy. Seems like Mike Hall might be a guy who goes up. Three that we had on the out of the first round conversation that if you look at some of the consensus boards are kind of floating around that sort of number, right? I think you're probably looking at, from our side, we had Ladd McConkey, who was 31st on Dane's big board, falling out, a guy who could sneak out of that first round and be it there at the top of the second. Another guy that we had perhaps falling out, Dane has him 29th. I thought Jordan Morgan, just because there's some concern about arm length and stuff like that. That's a guy, if he's there in the 50s, I'm like, he's a guard for, he's starting for you this year somehow. He's going to find right. a way on the field somehow.
Yeah. So I mean, that's 50s, a great one for the small trade up.
100%.
Yeah.
The other one that we put here who could fall out of the first round is Jackson Powers Johnson. Guy, like, seems like some guys like Frazier a little bit more. So there could be a little change there, but there's always, we'll talk about it after round one. There's always one or two that you're like, I did not see that coming in terms of a guy going in the first round. Again, we talked about this like a month ago, but like Cole Strange and some of these others, maybe Marshawn Nealon's a guy that sneaks into the first round at the end of the first round. Right. So yeah, a lot of good choices there.
I have a fun one there. I think this is very, very aggressive by me, but I got really good odds on Spencer Rattler going in the first round.
Could happen. It could happen if a team at the end
wants to get that 50
get out or get out of it, and somebody wants to move up. To
right.
Take him, right. Right.
So I just, you know, it's worth mentioning that I think the quarterbacks, as always, are all going to get overdrafted.
Of course. All right. So there's a question here from Eric, who's Eric Wheeler. We already answered that one through various other questions, man. So thanks for shooting that one over. We had a question sent over via DM about Javon Bullard. That came from K. Benny. Hopefully I got that right. Or it's got to be a first initial. Question about Javon Bullard. You know, he said it's unlikely the Browns go after safety, but he seems like his versatility could fit for the Browns as experience in the slot and at free. He's only 21 and could be a long-term answer post-Thornhill. I, you and I have said this, Andrew. I feel like safety is one we don't think is going to happen. We haven't talked much about it. But it does remain possible that they're grading out and the best player available is somebody like Bullard at 85 or I don't know necessarily where. So Dane has Jaden Hicks at the top of his safety board. He has Bullard. Let me check here just to make sure. So that we're not, he is him at 53. So you know, I don't think the Browns are taking him at 54, but it's possible maybe if he's there at 85 or if they slide back 15, 20 picks, they really like him. It remains possible. I do agree with you that Bullard is a fun player and was a big part of that Georgia defense that was flying around the football all the time. So definitely would be one that is under consideration that we have probably not spent a ton of time talking about just because it doesn't feel all too likely. A question comes over here, a couple more, Andrew, from Rasmig. Again, I think it's a John Carroll. I hope I said your name right, man. He said, love the show. Who are the players next week you want nothing to do with in rounds two and three? And I don't think we've answered that, Andrew, have we? Have we said, like, nothing to do with these guys? I mean, I'll let you go first, and maybe name a couple that you're just, I'm not, that wouldn't, you know, wouldn't move the needle much for me.
Yeah, I think the one that is the most surprising to people is Xavier Worthy. I understand the appeal. I just don't want to go down that road again. I think I really think like the kind of the best outcome for him is a sort of Travis Benjamin type. And yeah. I just don't, that's not a player type that I like that much, I guess is what yeah. I would say. I understand it. And I, you know, if the Browns pull the trigger on that at 54, I can get on board, but I just don't like players that undersized that have not shown the ability to really hang tough in the NFL and so, or in college even. So yeah, that's probably the number one name on my list.
I'm not all too keen on, I mean, Chris Jenkins has been sent to the Browns in a lot of mock drafts, Michigan defensive tackle, these guys who are very much run stoppers and they have a place in the league. But if I'm drafting a top 50 player here, which 54 is right on the cusp, like I don't want a single faceted defensive tackle. And so that one, I don't think would get the needle moving very much for me. Like if they took a guard like Cooper Beebe, I mean, I would get it, or somebody even closer to their range like Christian Haynes. I get it, but that's like, it's not that exciting for me in that moment. It's not that I don't like those players. I think you can make a case why Troy Franklin's a little nerve wracking, Andrew.
Yep.
Because of some of the ball frame tracking stuff that you're not, I mean, he runs well, but that's not necessarily something I think is, it translates easily or anything like that, you know, kind of getting over some of those issues, but.
Jatavion Sanders is another one at, I guess I just don't like Texas, I guess, but at 54, at 85, I could maybe get on board, but at 54, it just feels like I just don't see tight end as that type of a need for them.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't think he's a special enough player to justify that draft placement. So
are we off Jermaine Burton, you and I? Are you totally out on that player?
I just don't think they need any more of that.
I don't either.
I know that Andrew Berry doesn't care. He has proven that point again and again, that if he thinks the player is talented, he will find a way to put them on the team.
Right.
And is not going to worry about the off the field stuff. I don't personally, and it's not that I don't think that there's a place for that in the NFL. I just think that the Browns are really far on one side of the scale right now.
Yeah.
And it would be cool to kind of come back towards the middle.
I think the wide receiver in the top 10, I wouldn't be that, like, I just wouldn't be that moved by the players. Probably Roman Wilson. I see his value. I understand. I just think there are guys in this draft that are better at the things that he is sort of slated to thrive at out of the slot. There are better guys in and out of routes. There are better guys at the catch point. Wouldn't be crazy about that one. Right. Yeah, that's probably it. We've probably given enough. Downer grades on that. All right. Last question is not a question. It's a comment from Ryan Starcher. We want to read a nice comment. He said, I've been listening to your show for a number of years now, and the OBR film breakdown has been my primary form of Browns content that I consistently listen to. Just want to say that you guys are crushing it. I know life gets wild, but you, Andrew, and the OBR team have put out some of the most thoughtful, intellectual, and insightful content out there for just about any sport. Keep it up, man. We appreciate it. We appreciate y'all. We appreciate you, Ryan. Thanks very much for sending that over. Those kind messages really help us feel good about what we're doing, because ultimately we're putting in time behind the computer and trying to make the Browns more enjoyable. And I think it happens for some folks, or you guys wouldn't listen, but you know, it's it feels like at times, what am I doing this for again? Like, does anybody get any joy out of this stuff? And I think hearing that every now and again does help the overall process. So thank you for doing that. I know Andrew appreciates it as well, guys. That's all for the weekend mailbag. So just chock full of questions. We appreciate that very much. Like I said, we will do one of these after the draft, maybe like midweek after the draft, because Andrew and I will be going through a lot of the stuff and, you know, sort of discussing at length many of the aspects of the decisions they made. But you guys might have some questions that we didn't answer on a Monday, Tuesday. So maybe a Wednesday pod there would be really good. So get your questions in for that. And again, you can email them over, jake@theobr.com. Shoot them over via the OBR website or respond to the Twitter thread, and we will get to them. As long as they don't all cross together, we will try to make sure to give you a platform to get your question asked or comment read. So again, thanks for that, guys. Appreciate you very much. And from Andrew and myself, thanks for being here and making the OBR Film Breakdown a part of your weekend, wherever it finds you on this weekend, and that you're enjoying yourself and have a good one. Thanks again for being here. And rate and review the pod if you can. Always appreciate that, guys. Have a good one. Be safe. Go Browns.